The next case is 96-1429, Robert Walters Jr. versus Enrichment Center of Wishing Well.
Granted by the judge, did the judge indicate that he or she wanted the documents submitted in camera?
The documents were submitted in camera before the child.
So clearly applied with the revised Bell case and Moskowitz and Steckman.
That's correct. The documents that we filed were any documents in the appellee's possession related to their allegations. As I said, the office did review the documents that were and after reviewing them, ordered that they be produced. The appellant's appeal speech was recorded to appeal, and the appellant's attorney filed a motion to dismiss that appeal on the grounds that the discovery order counsel was not a final appealable order for purposes of revised code section 150.
Well, you have to show that this a discovery order or discovery proceedings are a special proceedings. Is that what your contention is?
No, our contention is that they are not special proceedings, and therefore the discovery order was not a final order.
Was not a final order. That's correct. They have to show that is what I'm going to say.
Revised Code Section 2505.02 sets forth the types of orders that are appealable. In great jurisdiction, the court appeals only hear those types of orders. Included among them are orders of special security rights related to special security. We are not disagreeing with you, but here's the order of the child court type of special rights. The issue is whether it is a special security. The issue can be settled by reference to the court's decision to make that substantial, in which the court very clearly said the discovery orders are interlocutory and as such are never final. Unfortunately, the court's appeals in this particular case did not cite the special decision. They relied upon their decision in Arnold v. American National Red Cross and the court's decision in Palo Alto, Nevada. The Arnold case involved a plaintiff who contracted HIV virus whose blood donated to the Red Cross. The plaintiff sought discovery to name the donor, information which was confidential pursuant to the statute. Ordered that the name of the donor be submitted to the plaintiff, and the court of appeals overturned that decision, reasoning that a statute conferred privileged confidentiality on information, the discovery proceeding became special proceeding in and of itself. Arnold was decided just prior to this court's decision in fact.
Well, even if it would appear to me that the court misinterpreted Polakoff. Even if we decided this case under Polakoff, it's not a special proceeding.
Polakoff looked to the underlying action to determine whether an action was a special proceeding. Polakoff's court said it's an investigation Schuster versus Schuster, which defined a special proceeding as one in which the law conferred the right and authorized a special petition or application to the court to enforce that.
Could you have a discovery order in a special proceeding?
It is possible that you could.
And what about that? What would we do with that? Is that a final appealable it's discovery, and it's in a special proceeding.
I would say that it would be unlikely because the discovery provision comes from the rules rather than that statute. The statute which confers confidentiality is here, which is by Section 1.14, says that it does not provide any proceeding by which that confidentiality or enforce the equity motion done under the rules of procedure as a motion for a protective order. Further authority to this provision is found in Bell v. Mountain Medical Center, a case that is decided in that case the court held that an order entered in the action for prejudgment interest was a final civil order. The court in Arnold, but in the special proceeding, wanted to vote against their privilege, preventing the further confidentiality. The difference between the statute in this case and the one in Arnold and the one in Bell is apparent. The statute in Bell was one which provided for prejudgment interest and provided the remedy to enforce that right, which is the filing of the court of the motion for prejudgment interest. This interpretation is consistent with the Schuster case led to the approval of Holocaust. The Court of Appeals in the case held that the appellants in the case could not seek immediate review. They would need to wait until the trial was submitted to review. The court found that the appellants know that once the information was divulged. This is a balancing test that was first set forth in Auto v. General Motors. That has weighed the harm to the prompt and orderly disposition of litigation and the consequence of judicial resources with the need for immediate review because of review after final judgment would not be practical. This test was found to be unworkable and was overruled by the court in Colorado. A look at how other persons failed to treat the decisions that were helpful in County v. Daly, second district court of appeals, held that an order compelling the disclosure of confidential information was not immediately reviewable. That case involved a third-party subpoena of information concerning independent medical exams and financial information related to those exams. In reaching its decision, that court of appeals relied upon the section's overruling of Humphrey, which was criticized under the tax bill, and State v. Portland Fishery. In Truman v. Roman, the other case the court certified in a conflict with the incident court of appeals decision. The 10th district court of appeals held that an order requiring disclosure of medical records that had been submitted to a quality assurance committee was not a final appealable order, again in reliance upon the court's decision in State v. Jackson.
In the Stuckman case, we acknowledge that there could be exceptions to the rule that we announced there, and I'm wondering, the legislature has made it very clear that it wants such reports to be confidential. They made a policy decision statement with respect to that. It's unequivocal, it seems to me, as the Court of Appeals stated. Why should we not carve out an exception here for an instance in which the General Assembly has given its unequivocal statement on the issue?
Well, in this particular case, the appellants and the applicants disagree as to which information is confidential. It has been our contention that the statute only applies to investigative reports compiled by the Social Services Agency. That isn't what we filed in discovery. We simply filed documents that were in the applicant's possession. And so
that gets us just to the traditional privilege rather than the statutory created.
The trial court reviewed these documents. Here, the trial judge is the only one who at this point knows what those documents are. I think it's in him that he felt that they did not fall within the confidentiality provisions of the statute.
And that's why we provided for an in-camera inspection.
Yes, and that was an earlier case. The court felt that that was the way to deal with the issue. The only protection that we have is the trial judge who reviewed the documents.
understand one more procedural thing that bothered me from your discussion. You're telling us that this case was appealed to the Court of Appeals from the trial judge's denial of the protective order, that the records submitted to the judge in camera were not sealed and did not go to the Court of Appeals?
No, they did not.
So the Court of Appeals wrote this opinion talking about privileged communications under the statute and has never seen the documents.
Thank you, Smith. Mr. Dover.
May it please the court, excuse me, I'm a little bit cold today. My name is Tom Dover from the law firm of Gallagher Sharp Holder, and I'm pleased to represent the appellees in this matter, the Enrichment Center of Wishing Well, and its director, Janice Carlisle. Your Honors, this is an important appeal because it involves alleged reports of child abuse. And today's decision will have an impact not only on my clients, but on all daycare centers, hospitals, school administrators, and psychologists that have to make their legally required to make child abuse reports pursuant to the Ohio Revised Code. Your Honors, it's the intention of the appellees that discovery orders are final appealable orders as defined in the Ohio Revised Code section 2505.02, where the order affects a substantial right and is made in a special proceeding. Now that's the propositional law that's in my brief. Your Honors, in preparing for this oral argument, I thought that propositional law might be a little broad. I still think it's a good law, but I think maybe a better rule that we would ask this court to adopt would be that if an order affects a substantial right and it's premised on the statutorily created privilege of confidentiality, then that should be an order considered made in a special proceeding and therefore a final appealable order.
It's a special, at best, I'm afraid, counsel, that you're arguing that it's a special defense.
It isn't. It's
because the assertion of the privilege, you know, is a defense to having that disclosed.
Exactly.
But it's not a special proceeding as defined in Polakoff, is it, by any stretch of the imagination?
Well, I think that if you look at Polakoff, it's personal. I think if you look at the Court of Appeals from the 8th Appellate District in Cuyahoga County, in the Arnold decision, and in this case, as well as looking at the Hamilton County Court of Appeals and its interpretation of Polakoff in the Neiman versus Cooley case, I think that it does fit. Because what Polakoff says is that orders that are entered in actions that were recognized in common law or in equity and were not specially created by statute are not orders entered in a special proceeding. Conversely, orders that were created by statute.
No. Skip the step there, didn't you? It's orders entered in actions, right?
Well, that's
okay.
True.
Orders entered
in actions.
Right. Now, what action was pending here?
Well, it's a defamation action.
Right. Okay.
Now, how Polakoff has been interpreted. Polakoff, admittedly, I think somewhere could have maybe more things. I think the way Polakoff was interpreted in the Arnold case, in the Walters case, in the Neiman versus Cooley is, then what do you look at to see if this with statutes involved, to see if it's a common law action or an equity? Do you look at the underlying nature of the action? Or you look at the nature of the privilege asserted.
But I know those cases have done that,
okay.
But they have ignored the words entered in actions. Isn't that the key word there?
Well, I guess I don't know. I would think that this would be, and it goes to special proceeding, that discovery orders that are premised on statutorily created privileges of confidentiality should be considered actions in and of themselves.
Okay, that's your argument.
That is my argument.
And then you have the problem that
that's
it also fits another category, and that is an order about discovery. And this peg fits in two holes. And we've spoken about the discovery orders in segments saying, no, they're not.
Well, I don't know if this court, I guess what I'm here to argue is that I don't think this court meant to, but I don't think it did, instead of saying that all discovery orders, no matter what, in any type of case, are never going to be appealed. If that's true, then I think that there are going to be many times where there are going to be legal and social injustices set, such as in this case, where there are statutorily created privileges which need to be addressed, and to wait until a later time, the privilege, the confidentiality is completely gone, and there is essentially no right to a later appeal. I think the better way to follow is what case, what the Court of Appeals did in this case, and in Arnold's, and Lehman versus Cooley, and that is, you look at it, and you say, discovery orders, in and of themselves, are generally not going to be appealed. But in the interest of justice, I think there should be certain carved exceptions. And those carved exceptions should fall into place with the statute of 2505.02, and that is, there must be an order that affects a substantial right, which there's really no dispute here, and it must be made in a special proceeding. Because SECMA certainly didn't overrule that statute. Now the question is, what is a special proceeding? In Polakoff, it sets forth the definition, I think it's a pretty good definition of a special proceeding. If there's an action in common law or equity, it's not a special proceeding. But the way, the question is then, is do you look at the underlying nature of the action, or do you look at the nature of the privilege asserted? And it's my position that you should look at the nature of the privilege asserted, because that's what's important. If you think about it, if you have a case, what if we had a case where the underlying action is based on statute, not on common law equity, or common law or equity, then what do we have?
Counselor, you must understand, we've had those cases. You can, one, a man stood there and argued some time ago, was where discovery was sought of his medical records, where he had been treated for something or other, mental illness, I think, and they sought his medical records in a case where his leg was broken in a car accident. If we accept your, we've thought of the things you've said, trust me, we really have, because what you're looking at is an exception every time for discovery orders. And you say no, all you have to do is look at the rule. Well, if you don't file a notice of appeal on every adverse discovery order, then you risk malpractice.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think, well, first of all, if that's what SECMA holds, and I don't think that that does, I don't think that's what it should hold, that all discovery orders, no matter what, are not appealable. Throughout the history here, I mean, there have been exceptions. There was in the past, before Amada, there was ways that you could have appeals. After Amada, there was a balancing test. And I'm not asking this court to come back to Amada with a balancing test.
You don't think that Stekman is clear?
I really don't.
Where it says discovery orders are interlocutory and as such are neither final nor appealable. And in the text of the case, we go on and say that discovery orders have long been considered interlocutory. No exceptions. We would have to overrule Stekman.
I really don't think,
explain to me how we would proceed without overruling Stekman.
I would say Stekman was very fact-decisive. It dealt with criminal cases, and it was clear to state that it only pertains to public records in criminal cases. One. The other important thing is, I think in almost every case decided by this court and ruled by the Court of Appeals, they generally recognize that discovery orders generally are interlocutory and are not appealable. Okay? So that's taken for granted. But other courts have hanged on and made certain exceptions, which I think should be done in this situation. Stekman doesn't overrule Polakoff. And neither Stekman or Polakoff overrules or says that discovery orders that would fit the criteria of 2505.02, substantial right and made in a special proceeding, still can't be appealed. And that's why I would argue that if you have an order that affects a substantial right and its premise on the statutorily created privilege of confidentiality, i.e. made in a special proceeding, then it should still be considered a final appealable order.
Now, you want to call this a special proceeding, Mr. Dover, but Polakoff went on to help him to try to define a special proceeding, and that is tough for lawyers. A lot of us said, what does that mean? You know, we know examples of an action for discharging the taxes, for instance, But the Polycoff says, every other proceeding where remedy is sought by original application to court for judgment or order is a special proceeding. So, as I said in the beginning, you were really just asserting a defense privilege, you know, in that, as a bar to disclosure. How does that fit that definition?
Well, Polycoff recognizes that definition in Schuster, which says where the law confers a right and authorizes a special application to the court to enforce it, the proceeding can be considered special.
Mm-hmm.
In this situation, what we're dealing with here are rights conferred by the Ohio legislature. Rights conferred on numerous entities that if they make reports, those reports will be privileged and confidential. These are special, statutorily conferred rights. It's my position that if these rights are violated, that would be considered a special proceeding. They're of such importance that then they have to be considered a special proceeding, and there should be a final appealable right, a final appealable order, so that the interest of justice can be served.
And yet the same Court of Appeals that sends us this case, based on Arnold, rejected the Arnold case in a case just previous to that in McHenry and said that it was not, per Polycoff, a special proceeding. How do we, if they can't reconcile it themselves, I mean, that's why we finally went through and did this, because we saw those kinds of things coming from all 12 districts. I mean, you can see that the Court of Appeals here relies on Arnold, certifies this issue to us. And do you also concede that the McHenry case, which is almost on all fours on a discovery issue, out of the same Court of Appeals, had just rejected Arnold?
I can try to distinguish McHenry. I think it can be distinguished, but I'm not going to watch it. I think that they probably should have reached a different decision in McHenry. I think that they probably should have found that was a final appealable order, dealt with prejudgment interest issues, which can be considered maybe a little bit different than the statutory privileges of confidentiality that we're dealing with here.
Let me go to a different issue entirely. Let's assume that all this is true, but it's not a special proceeding in that. But we want to carve out an exception for statutory created immunity. What's your best public policy argument for adopting an exception to the discovery rule of second clause?
My best public policy argument is that the entire legislation, I mean, if this court holds that all discovery rules are not appealable, if it holds the trial court judges can order child abuse records produced, then I think that has some very poor social and legal ramifications towards numerous entities that are specifically listed in the child abuse statute. The Ohio legislature put together the child abuse statute, and it requires, puts my client and other entities in a real dilemma, because it requires certain entities such as daycare centers, hospitals, schools, psychologists, with the absolute legal requirement to report suspected child abuse. Not only does it do that, but it goes farther in their criminal penalties for three misdemeanors if they don't report it, and it's later found out. So now they're faced with they have to report it, but yet if they know that when they make these reports, supposedly according to the statute, they're supposed to be confidential, which I think the statute is perfectly clear on. But some trial judge can say, no, these are confidential, and these have to be produced. That puts them in a real problem. Because now they know that any time they make a report of suspected child abuse, they can end up being sued, they can end up having to produce these reports, and they have essentially no right to appeal. Because once the report's produced, I don't think anybody can disagree. The privilege is gone, the confidentiality is gone, and the practicality of the appeal is
gone. Well, counsel, let's look at the flip side. If somebody in this business who has this privilege uses it, maliciously files a charge that is unfounded on the one to solve. That becomes public knowledge. It's serious damage to the citizen. Should that entity, be able to just stonewall it, bury the records, hide the records, never see the light of day, should there be no mechanism for that kind of conduct to be brought out in the court of action?
I think the legislature has spoken to that. And I think the answer is, unfortunately, yes. I think that there is no recourse. It's my position in this case. There's two sections to that, the child abuse section. There's a Section A and a Section B. Section A deals with certain entities, one of which is my client, daycare center. And there is no problem out there being done in good faith or anything like that. There's a Section B that talks about any entity. The general public who knows a child abuse can make these reports. It's in subsection B that the allegations of good faith.
And you're not comfortable trusting trial judges to do an in-camera inspection and saying, based on what I see here, you've blown your privilege. The privilege has no place.
I think the judge in this case made a mistake. I think the records he read the statutes not being purely confidential, and I think the records here are purely confidential as explicitly set forth in the statute and should not have been produced or reproduced. Now, I can't recall if they went to the Court of Appeals, so I'm not going to sit here and say that they went to the Court of Appeals because I really can't recall at this time if those, they were sealed, they were in camera, whether they went to the Court of Appeals, I can't recall. But
you've used your time, Mr. Dover.
Thank you.
Ms. Smith, you've saved 4.5 minutes of your time.
Smith, one more procedural thing before you take your rebuttal. My recollection is there was a split vote in this court on whether or not we should even certify this case. I think the reason for that is if you look at the certification order, can you tell me from the certification order, and I'm not asking you to look at it now, what case is this in conflict with?
Two cases from
the Second District?
One from the Second District, one from the Second District.
Okay, now how do I find that unless I search? Because I went back and searched to find the conflict in the Second District. How do I find that in their certification order or even their opinion?
They just don't.
I understand what they are. But the rule requires that when the case is certified to us, the proposition of law that is in dispute between two courts of appeals must be set forth and to tell us what case it's in conflict with. And we see a lot of that coming out of the 8th District, and I call it to your attention if you wondered why the certification was a split vote. That's the reason, because literally you have to hunt for the certified case. Here, don't you? I mean, the conflict case.
Yes.
Okay. Now, am I correct that it's in conflict with the Second District?
And the Second District,
and I went through and read their case, they reasoned the very same arguments that he's discussing, didn't they? And what did they say?
That case involves a third party for information regarding the Second District.
And finally, did you attach the Second District's case to your brief? I think you attached McHenry, and you attached the one from the 10th District, Turner, and that's all. No, I'm just telling you, that's what we have to do to finally figure out what your issue is, what the certified issue is, and that's why more and more I think we're maybe turning down certified issues, a majority of the court, because they don't follow the rule. Okay.
Put all children in danger, avoids the issue. The fact is, the parents who are accused of abusing
Thank you, Ms. Smith. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.